And we're live here on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. What's up, guys? Nick Scrip here on the P2W Fantasy Podcast. Plugging away in July now, getting closer and closer to the actual NFL season. And what I got going on today is a mailbag episode, which should be fun like always. You know, I like to mix these in from time to time just to do something different and hit a bunch of different topics. And I have a lot of good ones here today. I did want to plug, though, that it's my pinned tweet. I dropped the P2W Fantasy 2022 Draft Guide this past week, this past weekend, actually. I had some people go out there and purchase it already. I spent like a shit ton of time on this thing. I mean, it's like a massive, massive piece that I put a lot of my kind of heart and soul into. So just plugging it right now, table of contents. It's my pinned tweet on Twitter, but 86 pages of everything that's going to help you play to win. I mean, we're looking at stuff from last year. We're looking at strategies. We're looking at projections for this year, all in one spot, $5. It's well worth it. It's very, very, very detailed. It's probably the most detailed thing I've ever done in the space. So if you want to go check that out and how to purchase that, definitely would appreciate it. And I think it's well worth it. As always, this podcast is partnered up with the Fantasy Points Media Group. Go check out fantasypoints.com. It's your one-stop shop for all of your fantasy needs. Discount on there, P2W22. And if you are tuning in, like I said before, we got a mailbag episode, and it's going to be a good one.
No fear to give, I feel what I can't forgive. I go all in this time, yeah, I won't regret. I'll pick the best on trip, they don't understand. I play to win, yeah, I play to win, I play to win. Yeah, yeah, I play to win, I play to win. Oh, play to win, I play to win. Yeah, yeah, I play to win, I play to win.
All right, so mailbag episode. Had a bit of a long day today. It was gym first thing in the morning, go to work all day. Got ready for this show, got my lunch break, and then I had soccer camp. I run a varsity soccer program, and we had our first day at camp. So that was a pretty long one, but grind don't stop, and we're right back at it with the fantasy football content. I'm about it. I'm about it. You know, I know a lot of people are out there hustling and grinding, and all respect to them. And if you want things in the community, you want to, you know, share your content, you have to be consistent about it. So I'm hoping I'm one of those people out here. So let's start off with the first question of the day here at Nate_FFL. He asked Darnell Mooney or Michael Pittman in Dynasty. And if we look at his past season, both of these guys had a really good improvement to their year ones. Mooney plus 42 targets, plus 20 receptions, plus 424 receiving yards, plus 127 yards after the catch versus first year. He had 4 weeks above 120 receiving yards. He's going to be the Bears wide receiver one, at least in this next coming season. And then Michael Pittman Jr., wide receiver 21 finish. You know, he's had his hot streaks this past year. If we look at the sample size of weeks 5 through 9, he averaged 19 fantasy points, and he was the wide receiver 3, number 15 in receptions, number 16 in receiving yards, and number 14 in red zone targets. He had a 25.7% target share. Mooney had a nice one as well. Matt Ryan is obviously going to be with Michael Pittman this season, obviously not for, you know, a long run going. But when weighing out these guys, I have to lean Michael Pittman Jr. And I do love Darnell Mooney. I'm a Bears fan, and, you know, I can have a homer pick and go with him. But I think that for the longevity of Mooney being on the Bears, I don't know if I can see him being the wide receiver one for the next 10 years or the next 5 years. I have a feeling that this Bears offense is going to continue to build and expand. Michael Pittman Jr., on the other hand, I feel like he has the better chance of continuing to be the Colts wide receiver one. So, you know, I try to target, I said this in the guide, guys that will be their wide receiver one. And when I'm weighing these two guys out, who has a better chance of being their team's wide receiver one for the long haul, I think I'm going to lean Michael Pittman Jr. I think Darnell Mooney is going to have a nice career, be great for fantasy, but I also think that he's not going to be that guy, the wide receiver one, for the next 5 years. I think he's a good supplemental wide receiver two with a ton of speed. Got a C. Patterson take for redraft this season. So this is a side question, and I love it. I love it. If you guys are tuning in, shoot some questions in the comments. But Patterson, I think,
you know, the usage kind of dropped off the second half of the year to a degree. Obviously, he had a lot of big weeks. He scored touchdowns. He was utilized a ton for the Falcons. And you look at the roster right now and you say, is it, you know, much different? And I'd say to a degree, you know, Mike Davis is now with the Ravens. He didn't really have a large impact, though. Damian Williams, who had some really nice games in the past for the Chiefs, didn't do much in Chicago. I think he was banged up. He's there. Tyler Allgeier is there, who had a pretty productive season at BYU. And, you know, outside of that, it's them three juggling. So I can still see Patterson having some flex-worthy value. I wouldn't be comfortable with him as my running back two on my team. I'd rather him be a flex or like a cushion for my roster to have more running backs. We'll see what Allgeier does. I think he's very interesting because I think he's got a shot to take some touches. Same with Damian Williams, if we can actually see the Chiefs running back that he once was. What is up, Nate, in the chat? Next one on the list here, at DynastyFam_pod, which order are you taking these three wide receivers in redraft? Sutton, Marquise Brown, and Mike Williams. So this is interesting because I just did my rankings in the big 2022 redraft guide that I did, and Marquise Brown and Mike Williams, I had them back-to-back in my rankings. You know, if you want to check out exactly where they were at, it's in the guide. It's well worth it. I'm going to lean Hollywood, though, and I have them both in the same tier, and I think the reason I take Hollywood over Mike Williams is I think Mike Williams probably has a bigger ceiling than Hollywood Brown, even though Hollywood Brown, we know, has a ton of speed and can take the top off of a defense, and now he's with Kyler Murray. But I think Mike Williams, you just see these games of like 30, 35 fantasy points out of nowhere. So I think the ceiling might be higher for Williams, but Marquise Brown is attached to Kyler Murray, and he is his number one option, I think, right now in that offense until Hopkins comes back week 6. So, you know, I really like Zach Ertz this season, but if we look at the teams, for me, Keenan Allen is still target number one for Herbert. Now we look at the other system, and I think Marquise Brown is target number one for Kyler Murray, and this is more of a redraft-focused question. Sutton, you know, I haven't been as high on in some of the community, but I have Sutton in a tier right under those two guys. So in redraft, if I had to rank those three guys, I'll probably lean Hollywood, Williams, and then Sutton. But like I said before, I have Hollywood and Mike Williams back-to-back, so I might change, you know, my opinion tomorrow on those two guys, and they're in the same tier. So I think when guys are in the same tier and they're so close, it's your preference. And Sutton will just be in the tier right under that. Oh, look at this guy. We got Kevin in the chat trolling per usual. He's off of his burner. Next one on the list here. At Stuck Cheap, what draft strategy do you use? Do you load up on running backs early or load up on wide receivers and hope to get a steal later in the draft on running back? And does that strategy change depending on the draft spot? So draft spot to me definitely is important because if you're at, you know, pick 2, for me, I'm not thinking about Cooper Kupp or Justin Jefferson or one of the tight ends. It's going to be Taylor or McCaffrey for me. At 3 and 4, probably the same thing. I think later in the draft, it really, and the point I'm going to stress here is playing your board. I think it really just depends on who is falling where. If I'm at pick like 10 and Justin Jefferson's there, I'm usually a running back first guy, probably taking Justin Jefferson because I think maybe he should have went at, you know, pick 6, 7, or 8. If I'm at pick, you know, 6 in the middle of the draft, I still might lean running back. I'm typically a big running back drafter. I like to pound that position or at least get like one stud, anchor that running back, and then, you know, go from there because I feel like it's a thin position and I know guys get hurt all the time, but having a powerful running back in your roster that, you know, is there for 14 weeks, I think goes a longer way at times than having a wide receiver that, you know, has 5 other guys performing to the same level. Obviously, like, you know, Cooper Kupp last season is the exception for that, but I tend to lean running back in the first round. Again, though, if I'm at the end of the first round, I'm pick 12 or 11 or 10, and it's, you know, Cooper Kupp still floating there, then I'll probably go that way, and then my next two might be running back. So the big thing here for me is play the board. You know, you go into these drafts all the time, and people want to tell you, you know, go in with a good strategy. Are you going to be, you know, zero RB, or you're going to load up on running backs, you're going to get one stud per position. I say, you know what, go in there with an idea of guys you want to leave the first two rounds with or three rounds, and then just build from there. And I think I'm going to get more into that on a different podcast, but that's pretty much my strategy going into in a redraft. I want to build the highest value team with the best players possible. At jwill_ff3, three wide receivers are rising in ADP. DJ Moore with the Baker boost, Terry with the contract boost, Hollywood with the Kyler Nook boost. Whose rise is justified and whose is not? So I would say that there is a way you can easily justify all of those guys trending upwards, right? You know, if you look at DJ Moore, I've liked Darnold in the past, but I understand that, you know, there's been some inconsistencies with him and he has some really, really down games. But you might say, hey, DJ Moore, love the talent, love the player. He's still young. We've seen some good yardage seasons out of him. I think he's had a top 12 finish in his past for PPR 1 through 16. You can say, hey, he's got I'm not a big Baker guy, but you can say he's got a QB upgrade. You can say that. Terry, he's got the contract, but also looking at his tenure of quarterbacks, you might say Terry McLaurin's got a boost in his quarterback. And then if you look at Hollywood Brown, who we talked about already a little bit, he's with Kyler Murray, and then they mentioned Nook, who is DeAndre Hopkins. He's going to be suspended for 6 weeks, and I got to lean him having the biggest boost just because we have to look at the quarterbacks that these guys have. So if I'm weighing out who gets the biggest boost between, you know, the wide receiver for Baker Mayfield, Carson Wentz, or Kyler Murray, Kyler Murray, respect the player, what he does for fantasy. Again, he's been another guy that I'm not as high on as others in the community, but I will say he's in that upper tier of quarterbacks in the fantasy world and in real life. So again, weigh out what quarterbacks these wide receivers just got. And that's the easiest way for me to say that it's Hollywood Brown because he's got Kyler Murray and these other guys. You know, DJ Moore, is he more talented than Hollywood Brown? Maybe I'd say that. But if they're like similar in some level, I think there's a huge difference between Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield for me. At FF Chris B, Nick, I got a dynasty question for you. T. Higgins behind Chase, but with Burrow, or Jalen Waddle behind Hill, but with Tua? And this one was tough, because I can literally just lean one way and roll with it for this. If we're looking at the teams, Chase is 22 and Tyreek Hill is 28. So to me, that means in my mind that I think that there's a good chance within a year or two, maybe 2-3 years, whatever timeline you want to look at, that Jalen Waddle becomes the wide receiver one. Maybe some people want a hot take and say this season he will be the wide receiver one for Miami. I think it's going to be Tyreek Hill. They did a lot to get him on the roster, but he's 28. So when Tyreek Hill is 31, is he still going to be the alpha or the go-to target, or, you know, the most targeted player on this team? I don't think so. Chase, on the other hand, with Higgins, he's 22, so he's younger than Higgins. He's going to be there forever. As long as those guys are both under contract for the Bengals, that guy's not going anywhere. And Higgins actually averaged more targets per game this past season than Jamar Chase. And I have Higgins as a top 12 wide receiver this year. I think I had him right at 12. I had Waddle a little bit further, but I think timeline-wise for Dynasty, you know, Waddle just broke the rookie receiving record. I think you can justify and say maybe Waddle, just because there's a good chance that he becomes his team's wide receiver one. And then you can go into the battle of like Burrow versus Tua. But I think if these guys, I mean, if you go to any site, I'm sure that these guys are very, very close to each other. And it's flipped. One site might have Higgins, one site might have Waddle. I say I might lean Waddle if I'm playing the long game. If I'm a team that can win in a shorter window, maybe I lean Higgins, just because, like I said, this year I have Higgins over Waddle in 2022, but I can kind of justify if you want to lean Waddle for the long run there. So just a different way of looking at that. My guy, John at Junior Football Nerd, he asked, which NFC East running back do you prefer at cost in PPR leagues? Saquon Barkley, Ezekiel Elliott, Antonio Gibson, or Miles Sanders? And at cost means ADP or where they are being drafted. So a guy that is being drafted in the second round costs a lot more than somebody that's being drafted in the sixth round because you are spending a high draft pick and investing in that player more than you are the guy later in the draft. So that's kind of what the cost part of it means. If we're looking at ADP, where they are currently going in drafts, I pull this from Fantasy Pros. Barkley, running back 14. Elliott, running back 18. Gibson, running back 19. Sanders, running back 27. Here's where I had guys in my last rankings, which are going to change a ton, so don't live and die by what I'm saying right now because a week from now it might be different. But I had Barkley as running back 11. He's going as the 14th. So that's a bit of a, you know, not a steal, but it's higher than consensus. Elliott, I had right at RB 18 on the dot. Gibson, I had at running back 25. He's going as running back 19. Sanders, I had right around running back 27 as well. So Sanders and Zeke, I got like right on the money. I'm higher on Barkley. Gibson, I'm lower on that. So for cost, that's where it gets interesting because, you know, where you take a guy being drafted as the running back 27, Sanders versus Barkley at running back 14, two different things. But I'm pretty in on Barkley having a bounce back year this year. I have him inside my top 12. 1,307 rushing yards and 91 receptions his rookie year. He had 1,000 rushing yards the year after. He's further away from that ACL injury. They added Brian Daboll from the Buffalo Bills. Great head coach signing. They drafted Evan Neal. So they're improving their offensive line. Their offense is getting better. You got, obviously, Tony in his second year. Wandale Robinson was just drafted. Kenny Golladay hopefully is healthy. I think Daniel Jones is a bit of a sleeper, especially where he's going in drafts. Barkley's got the dual threat ability that you want for fantasy football. He can catch passes, and he can run super effectively. So, you know, he's been disappointing, and he's burned people, but I think the further he gets away from his injury that he had, the big one, I know he's had some ankle issues and some other things in the past. The further he gets away from his major injury, this offense is getting a lot better. He probably wants to get paid one day, and I think Barkley is going to bounce back. So I think out of those guys, if I need to invest in somebody, I'm investing in the guy that I think is going to be a top 12 running back at the end of the day. At Firewalk underscore WME. Interesting question. Where does data end and film study begin? Feels like there's a lot of data metrics out there, but could also be misleading without some eyes on work. What's your strategy and why does it, and it got cut off, work for you? Interesting strategy because we have a lot of people that grind film and they watch players and how they, you know, for wide receivers run routes and how they get open and what they do with the ball in their hands and their vision. I mean, you can go down the list and they break down the film. The data aspect looks at, you know, all their stats and then it goes deep into specific categories of stats and breaks down a load, you know, loads of different metrics for players. I've typically been a data guy because it's whatever the data is, that's what it was. You know, if they had X amount of yards per route run, that's what they did. If you want to say, you know, it gets sketchy comparing it to the position, maybe it does because, you know, injuries come into factor and quarterback play comes into factor a little bit, but it kind of is what it is. I also like, I don't want to pretend I know how to break down film. Like I watch the games and you can see certain things. And the more you dig into data, the more you can like piece together, oh, that's how it looks. But like, I've been a big film guy for the coaching world for soccer. And I've done tons and tons of film breakdowns. Every single game in college, I was breaking down the film. And in high school, I'm the head varsity coach. I do the same thing. I clip it. I show things to guys. I move, you know, my marker and points on where guys got to be and what they need to do. I'm not going to pretend to know how to do that for football. I think some people might, you know, learn gradually like, hey, this is how, you know, you break down film and they're, you know, people are going to learn things all the time. But I also don't think that a lot of coaches that coach soccer, different sport, really know how to break down film. I think it's something that you really need to be shown how to do the correct way. So I'm never going to pretend to know how to break down football film, But I also will like listen to guys that do. So like Darnell Mooney, who we mentioned before, his rookie season, there was these guys that broke down some plays of him getting wide open and saying he wasn't throwing the ball in these moments. Or there was times that he burned some guy and had to come back for a pass. Will all the data show that clearly? No. So that's interesting. Elijah Moore, I think I saw some things as well. He's, you know, my guy. But at the beginning of the season, he was getting overlooked and he was open. So when people point out that stuff, maybe, you know, saying, man, Elijah Moore only got one target or two targets week two. But in reality, he could have gotten like seven, you know. So like that portion of the game, I trust the people that know how to do that and have the time to do that. So I can see how both kind of go hand in hand, because the data doesn't always speak for the entire picture. But also I'm saying, like, you need the right people who know how to break down the film and actually do it the correct way. At sports underscore spam. I need CEH guidance. And does anyone else in the KC running back room have any relevance? So I was one of the guys that said, you know, the Jerick McKinnon, bringing him back was like the death sentence to CEH. But when you look more into it, McKinnon never exceeded during the regular season 31% of the snaps. You know, like he kind of fell into work, and then he was hot. You know, he was hot in the actual NFL playoffs, so they gave him the ball. CEH had his injury issues, medical issues during the season. And, you know, weeks 3 and 4, we saw CEH go over 100 yards rushing, and we're like, damn, you know, maybe we got something here. And, you know, week 14, later down the road, he had 2 rushing touchdowns. So you're like, oh, maybe, you know, we got something here. But he was banged up a ton. McKinnon came in. He was hot. They rolled with the hot hand. Rojo is interesting, though. So Ronald Jones, never been a big Rojo guy. And I had to apologize for his one good season like 2 years ago or whatever it was. But never been a big Rojo guy. You know, Fournette kind of pushed him out of a job altogether in Tampa Bay. Andy Reid recently had this big quote about Ronald Jones and CEH, but one of the sentences was, they'll work together and be a pretty good combo, which to me means they might either run with the committee or they might just run with the hot hands. And for fantasy, that's super fucking annoying, because you don't want to, like, you know, start CEH 1 week and out of nowhere, Rojo's got 18 carries to his 3 or something like that. Or vice versa, you know, you bench CEH and now he's got like the full workload. So camp's going to be important to kind of get more coach speak a little bit. You got to be careful with that, but to see what's going on. But I will say the price, so where they're being drafted, very different. I think CEH is a top 30 pick. I think he's at somewhere between like 26 and 28 for the position. Rojo on, oh, he's 26. I had it here. So CEH is going as a running back 26, Ronald Jones, the running back 42. So if it does end up being a committee or they roll with the hot hand, what you spend in your draft for CEH versus Ronald Jones is 2 different things. So it's kind of up to you the chance you want to take with his backfield. I'm not looking at McKinnon unless one of these guys gets hurt. You know, he had a good role, but again, like never really played a ton of the snaps. And with the other two guys, I don't know if I want to spend that running back 26 price for CEH. Miles Sanders is right after that. I think I'd be more comfortable with him because I think there's a better chance that Ronald Jones cuts into the work versus Kenny Gainwell cutting into the rushing work, I guess. But it's kind of how I look at that situation. Next one, probably pretty quick with this. My guy, Zach Noble, he goes, Justin Jefferson, Chase, Taylor, Najee, what's your dynasty order for these guys? So Justin Jefferson, it's Jamar Chase, Jonathan Taylor, Najee Harris. So I think there's 2 ways you can look at this. You can look at the most valuable player as of today, which is probably Jonathan Taylor, and then you kind of go in the order from there. So I can totally justify, for me, it being Jonathan Taylor, Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, Najee Harris. Love Najee, but I would prefer the other 3 over him in a dynasty league. So when somebody asks this question too, you got to put yourself, today is a dynasty startup draft. You are on the clock. Who's your first pick? It's number 1. You got the first pick of the draft. If you go Taylor, it makes sense to me. But it also makes sense if you go Jefferson or Chase. I would prefer Jefferson over Chase. And the reason it makes some sense to me is because Jefferson and Chase, the longevity of them being elite wide receivers is probably longer than the longevity of Jonathan Taylor being an elite running back. And we know that the shelf lives of running backs are much shorter than the shelf life of a wide receiver. So if you think long-term, I'm playing the long game, I'm building the best dynasty roster for the next 10 years, you might say I'm taking Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase, just because you're going to get another 8 years out of those guys. Where Jonathan Taylor, is he going to be elite at 30? Probably not. Could Justin Jefferson be elite at 30, similar to like Davante Adams, who's going to be around that age? Probably, right? So that's, you know, I would either go Taylor, Jefferson, Chase, Najee, or Jefferson, Chase, Taylor, Najee. It kind of depends on the direction you want your roster to go. Do you want to really compete right now, or do you want to play the long game, I guess, with that first overall pick, if that's, you know, what you had? Because if you're going to juggle this group of guys, you'd have the number one pick. So FF underscore worm, if you're waiting on tight end, who are you looking to draft in later rounds? So I cover this in my guide, but I have a couple targets that maybe not the latest of rounds, but some targets of mine for this coming season. If I don't get Kelce, Andrews, or Pitts, I know there's Darren Waller and Kittle and Hockenson. I'm going to push that group to the side. My big three are Kelce, Waller, and Pitts. I have Kelce and Kelce, Andrews, and Pitts. I have Kelce and Andrews in one tier, and then right in his own tier, I have Pitts, and then I have other guys in different tiers. So I really have two tiers of three guys. But if I wait, Dalton Schultz is a guy I've been pounding the table on that, you know, if I don't get one of those elites, I'm going to take him. Tight end four last season. He was top five in routes run, receptions, and touchdowns. He provides some after the catch. I think there's a great chance he is the second option in this offense until Michael Gallup comes back. And then when Michael Gallup does come back, I'm not sure he's 100%. So I think Dalton Schultz has that opportunity to be a Travis Kelce or Mark Andrews or a Kyle Pitts that can be one, you know, the second premier or the first premier target in his offense. I'm going to say CeeDee Lamb will be the number one. So Schultz could be the number two. And he had a great season last season. He goes around pick 68 as a tight end seven. I think I had him as my tight end four. I was a little high on him in comparison to consensus. Next guy I would consider, he goes overall pick 96 in PPR one quarterback leagues. And the tight end nine is Zach Ertz. Tight end four, weeks 7 through 17, once he transitioned over to Arizona. Weeks 15 through 18 at the end of the season. I think we got a glimpse of what it's going to look like for some weeks with Kyler Murray now that Hopkins is suspended. He had 11, 13, 9, and 10 targets. So this also is a guy that could be the team's second option in their offense, at least until the missing piece comes back. So Schultz and Ertz kind of mirror each other in that sense. They're going to be missing a big piece of their offense for X amount of weeks, and they can be the number two in their offense. And that's why even further, Cole Kmet, one of my guys, pick 127, tight end 13. He's a guy that can be the second option in his offense. And that's why I think Evan Ingram, even later, pick 180, tight end 21, is another like super late, you know, dart throw, just because, you know, when I'm targeting tight ends in fantasy football, I want somebody that has a consistent target share on a weekly basis. Obviously, you know, you're going to have weeks of guys that get 10 targets and then they get six or something like that. But if you can find a guy that has a very prominent role in his offense, that's where you get, you know, these guys that have these high fantasy finishes because they're important to their offense. Whereas, you know, there's some other guys that you might juggle around that had pieces added to their team and it might take away their target ceiling. Like Dallas Goedert, I'd probably still, you know, have him as a top 12 tight end, but with now A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith and him, do we trust that his targets are consistent on a weekly basis? Same with Mike Gesicki. Like with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, do we trust that his target share and his targets are consistent on a weekly basis? I don't know. But Schultz and Ertz, I feel pretty comfortable with that. Same with Kmet, because he right now is behind Darnell Mooney in my eyes because the rest of the receiving room is pretty trash. But, I mean, that's just being honest. Evan Ingram late is interesting because Trevor Lawrence, we'll see what his connection is with Christian Kirk. And, you know, you got Chenault there and Marvin Jones Jr. and Zay Jones. But I think Evan Ingram, we've seen a really good season out of him. It was his first season. He's pretty athletic. Does he have a chance to, you know, have a bounce back career with Trevor Lawrence? Austin Hooper's another guy, I think, super late. Pick 204, tight end 26, that I've been leaning in favor of just because there's been reports that Tannehill prefers Austin Hooper right now. If he becomes a target that has a good connection with Tannehill, then maybe we see more of Atlanta Falcons Austin Hooper in comparison to what he did with the Cleveland Browns. So if we get a glimpse of Falcons Hooper, that's fantasy relevant. At Donnie G 8888, he goes, when do you draft your second quarterback in a two quarterback league? So two quarterback leagues, you have to start two quarterbacks. He might be talking about Superflex, though. I think that's more common. Superflex is where you have the option to start a second quarterback. So you can technically start like a wide receiver, a tight end, or a running back. But you typically want to start another quarterback. But I unless it's at the end of the first round and, you know, guys are falling that are premier players for their position, I typically, in a Superflex, will draft a quarterback, stud quarterback early, then I might wait until like the third or fourth round to grab my second one. It's just the big thing with this is you have to see how everybody else is addressing the quarterback position. And the risk of that is that there might be a run of quarterbacks. You wait, and then the next six picks are quarterbacks, and you're like, oh shit, like I dug myself a hole. But I think, you know, I played in a Superflex league before where none of us knew what we were doing. It was year one, and nobody drafted quarterbacks till like the third round. That is extremely uncommon now. Usually it's a string of quarterbacks, then maybe like a Taylor or Jefferson or Cup, more quarterbacks, and then you keep addressing the positions as they go. You kind of just got to play your board, though. I would say early in the first round, I would be drafting a quarterback. I'd take the best available, in my opinion. And then from there, I would just see how the board's going, because if you're going to make your pick at pick four, you're going to see a lot of picks before it comes back to you. So if a lot of quarterbacks are hanging, then you know that, hey, maybe I can take a positional player here and wait until the wraparound for my next pick, you know, in round three to take that second quarterback, or maybe I can wait even longer. I don't mind, you know, taking an elite guy too and then grabbing like a pretty good guy and then, you know, some guys that are just going to be depth pieces later. So like if you went like, I don't know, Justin Herbert, and then later like Kirk Cousins, and then later you had like Goff and like Mills or something like that, I don't mind that. It just depends on how you're filling the rest of your team. If you kind of fade quarterback a little, you got to make sure that the rest of your team is pretty strong. At Joe Pepe, would you rather go T. Higgins and J.K. Dobbins or Antonio Gibson and Michael Pittman Jr.? So he's pretty much asking, like, if you had combos of these guys, who would you take? I will say that I am nervous about Dobbins just because if he's not ready for week one, I question how the rest of his season is going to be. You know, they say that guys after an ACL tear, they recover different. And if they're still kind of rehabbing or like trying to get back to 100%, maybe their workload's not where you want it to be. So that's one thing that comes to mind with Dobbins. In a perfectly healthy world, I'm saying Dobbins over Gibson and not really thinking twice about it, because we know the state of the Ravens offense and how they like to run the ball. Gus Edwards also tore his ACL at a later time, and Mike Davis is just a guy. I would prefer Higgins over Pittman this season by literally a hair. I think I had, I can scroll somewhere, but I'm pretty sure I had Higgins as like wide receiver 12 and Pittman as wide receiver 13. So I think for me, with Higgins and Pittman so close, this would come down to, and I've been fading Gibson just because of J.D. McKissic taking away the passing work, and now you got Brian Robinson who might maybe take some goal line work, and Rivera kind of likes him and talked about a 1-2 punch. I would just hope that Dobbins is healthy, and then I would lean Higgins, Dobbins, just because I like Dobbins more than Gibson, and Higgins by a hair over Pittman. If Dobbins was going into the season banged up, then maybe I lean the other way. So it just really depends on Dobbins' health. At Diego_Built, which rookie running backs will have the benefit of more playing time besides the two obvious in Hall and Walker? So three guys come to mind. James Cook, he was taken in the second by the Bills. They went out and really tried to go get J.D. McKissic, who almost was a Buffalo Bill, and then he wasn't. And James Cook, he can run the ball. sure, but he is a big pass catching back. And I think that they went into the draft saying, hey, we missed on McKissick. We need to get a pass catcher that can fill that role. I'm not sure how often they use that role with Josh Allen, but I think, you know, trying to fill a certain type of player and then going and getting that player because it didn't work out, to me, means James Cook has a good potential to go out and get some PT year one. Some people will say he's going to take over the job completely. Singletary, I think, earned himself, you know, some weeks of getting that workload. So maybe he doesn't get receiving work and James Cook does, but I don't think that James Cook comes in right away and just takes all the work. So I do think he will have a role. Damian Pierce in the fourth round. He was picked in the fourth round by the Texans. You know, big, mean, fierce running back. You see videos of him. The one I love of him is he's like pounding through guys and his helmet flies off and he's celebrating. But he never got the true workload at Florida, which some may say is concerning. And he's not like lightning fast or anything. But if we look at the Texans running back room, Marlon Mack, who is coming off of an Achilles tendon tear. I think he's maybe a full year from it now, but we're not sure if he's the same back or not. You know, you got Rex Burkhead there too, but Damian Pierce, I think, has a chance to carve out a significant role year one, and volume is everything. So if he can get volume, then he's a guy that you would really want to take a look at for fantasy football. And then last guy, Tyler Allgeier, got drafted in the fifth round by the Falcons. Mentioned him earlier, but Damian Williams is there. We got C-Pat Patterson, who had a great season last year. But again, for the rushing role, could he carve himself out, you know, X amount of carries increasingly as the season goes on? I think there's a chance for that. So I'd say those three stand out to me. A lot of people like Rashad White. I do too. I think he was like my running back, I don't know, three or four before the NFL draft happened. But I think they're going to lean on Lenny Fournette, and there's Spiller, but you know how much work is he going to grab from Eckler? I'm not sure about that, but I think these three guys have a pretty good shot. The two guys because of the running back rooms that they're in, and then James Cook just because they try to fill that role. At Triple A Fantasy, who is this year's Lamar Jackson? So a QB you can get late that has QB1 upside. So overall QB1 upside, and I said this in the guide, dark horse is Jalen Hurts. Because of the extremely high rushing ceiling that he's displayed, but now his offense is gearing up to be good in the passing department as well, and he actually had some decent deep ball statistics, and I think he gets a lot of knocks for being a shaky passer and this and that, but he was throwing the ball to Rieger and like Watkins on top of a rookie Devonta Smith, but that I think the question is looking for deeper guys. So some sleepers that I like for this coming season, and I outlined this in the draft guide, but Tua, I think he's got a great offense. I think they're really setting him up to be successful. I think he's going to have some passing upside. We saw like Jimmy G last year have 300-yard passing days, and that's because he just was efficient at times with putting the ball in his playmaker's hands. If Tua can be efficient and put the ball in Tyreek Hill and Waddle's hands, they're going to get the extra yardage, which is going to increase his total yardage and hopefully his touchdowns. Jameis Winston's a sleeper too. If everybody in that system is healthy with Michael Thomas and Jarvis Landry and Alvin Kamara and Chris Olave, but there's question marks literally with all of those guys besides the rookie, to be honest. Daniel Jones, I think, is a sleeper too. Could he finish top 12? And I'm not entirely sure, but he does have rushing upside. He does have a healthy Saquon Barkley, Kadarius Toney, and Wan'Dale Robinson, our yards after the catch guy for a little bit more in his passing department. And then, you know, hopefully Kenny Galladay is healthy. But those guys, I think, are sleepers at the position. Love rushing quarterbacks. So depending on where Trey Lance is going in your draft and depending on where Justin Fields is going in your draft, to be a top 12 for Justin Fields, I think it's going to be pretty tough. Trey Lance, I think his ADP is right outside of that, so he's not really like a late-round guy. But depending on where he's going in your draft, he's another guy that has a high rushing upside to him, but he has a system that should give him a cushion with Kittle and Debo and Ayuk and Mitchell, who I do like. My guy at the boys underscore 22. So Kevin asks, who do you trust more in redraft, George Kittle or Darren Waller? Interesting question, because both of these guys missed some time last season. Waller played in 11 games. George Kittle played in 14. And both guys have other guys that can take targets away from them, right? If we look at the Raiders, Waller has Davante Adams now. But on the other side with the 49ers, Kittle has Debo, who had a great season. Raiders, they got Hunter Renfrow. But then 49ers have Brandon Ayuk. So there's like a very similar set of mirroring going on right here. I look at the quarterback for one. So Trey Lance, I'm not saying he's going to be a bust or anything like that, but he's going to be in his first full season. And do I think the 49ers are going to turn into this like super pass-heavy offense with they got a couple running backs that can get the job done? I do like Elijah Mitchell a lot. So let's just say it's Elijah Mitchell, and they have a rushing quarterback, and they got some guys that they can scheme up some plays for. Are they going to air it out? I don't know. With Derek Carr, though, number five in passing attempts this past season, 626. Number five in passing yards, 4,804. And then Player Profiler gave him an accuracy rating across the board for quarterbacks, number two. So this is a quarterback with some good accuracy. This is a quarterback that threw the ball to a high degree last year. And it's a quarterback that I think I trust a little bit more than Trey Lance year one in the passing department for the tight end. Could be, well, you know, way off on that. But I'm also a little bit more concerned about Kittle's durability than Darren Waller's. I think Kittle plays just so hard every single week, every single game. I think he's a little bit more, I'm not going to say prone, but maybe to getting banged up. And another thing, too, with these systems is, you know, I think, you know, we could say with Darren Waller that Davante Adams might take away some of his red zone looks, which could be the case. But you can also say that, you know, the Raiders might be more prone to passing the red zone than the 49ers, who might just try to, you know, pound the rock in with their quarterback, Debo, or the running back. So I'm going to lean Darren Waller in this one. And I know that Davante Adams, in my opinion, is a better wide receiver than anybody on the 49ers. But I think, you know, Carr being a little bit more pass heavy and Darren Waller being a little less likely to get banged up kind of leans me in that direction. At Cruiser 128, who's your favorite rookie running back? So I'm just going to cop out and say Breece Hall. You know, he's pick 36 from Iowa State. Looking at his college stats, 3,941 rushing yards, 82 receptions, and 56 total touchdowns, which profiles him as a workhorse running back in the NFL. He left a great mark in the NCAA. He has the consecutive touchdown record with a rushing touchdown in 24 straight games. He was a top 10 finalist his past two seasons in college. It's easy to say the running back one from this draft class is my favorite, but I haven't been saying that he's going to break out year one. I know Michael Carter's there, but he's a workhorse back. I think he's very talented. I think he can handle volume. I think this Jets offense is growing, and I think his ADP is far off from where I actually have him. I debated putting him in the top 12 right at the end, at like running back 12. I think I had him somewhere between like 14 and 16 or something. I could be wrong, but somewhere in that range right there. But I think he's going to smash his ADP and just be another rookie running back that has a great year. And we see that often the last handful of years that a rookie running back is being drafted outside of where they actually finish. And it's beneficial to go and grab them and not worry about, you know, rookie fever. My guy ain't done yet. Where do you have Justin Fields in your redraft ranking? So for Justin Fields, I've said this before, but 9 games played with 70% of the snaps or more. In 4 of them, he was a top 12 quarterback. In 1 of them, he was a top 5 quarterback. So we've seen good fantasy finishes for Justin Fields. And Allen Robinson is gone, but Allen Robinson was not a factor for Justin Fields. Just going to say it. It was probably a mix of things. It was probably the playbook. It was probably Allen Robinson not really caring at that point, which, I mean, as a Bears fan, don't really respect that. But, you know, it's probably a product of the playbook. And maybe the playbook is a product of him not caring. It's probably back and forth with the fingers pointing. But it's a tough situation because, you know, the O-line, they tried to address it a little bit. Probably not going to be the greatest still. Doesn't have the best of weapons. It's Darnell Mooney and Cole Kmet. And then it's like Byron Pringle and Velus Jones Jr. and St. Brown, but not the good one. So he's not set up to be successful, but I really, really like Justin Fields as a talent. He's got super athletic rushing upside, and I think he's a much better passer than people give him credit for because we've seen it at Ohio State. You know, we talk about the college career of guys like, you know, Chris Olave. That was his dude when Justin Fields was in college 2019 and 2020, his dude was Chris Olave, and they had a good connection. But I had him as my QB 17, but I think he's a good person to have as your second option on your bench because I think if he does find some consistency for fantasy where he's rushing a ton, having some decent passing yardage, and he's consistent, then he goes from your bench guy to maybe a matchup play. They're playing, I don't know, the Giants or the Lions or something, whoever you want to say. I'm not knocking any of those teams. But maybe he's a matchup play, or it's your bye week fill-in for a quarterback that has a safer floor because of a high rushing upside. So if I'm looking at my second quarterback to roster in redraft, maybe I don't need it to be Carson Wentz. Maybe I'd rather it be a Justin Fields who isn't being drafted very high, but on any given week can hit like 100 yards rushing and a rushing touchdown. And even if he doesn't have a good passing day, finishes as a top 12 guy on a given week. So draft your bench with some upside. Justin Fields, even if I don't have him as high as you would like, I think that he does have upside and he would be worth the roster for a plug and play situation because there might be some safety to his floor. Like I make Breeze in the third round of Scott Fishbowl, which is going on right now. Actually, I had my Scott Fishbowl fund. It's the biggest fundraiser in all of fantasy sports. We had a live one at Bourbon Street for the Chicago people. It was awesome. I stood too late. It was the day before my daughter's birthday. Bad mistake. So Jefferson, I'm going to say this. Jefferson is my wide receiver one. I might lean Cook, though, because I have my redraft cap on. And I'm thinking to myself, I know first downs are a thing, and it, you know, there's all these different scoring settings. I'm going to lean Cook. Neither one of these guys is going to fall to the third, just to be honest. But if I'm just juggling between who I'm taking between Dalvin or Jefferson, I think I'm going to take Dalvin Cook because I'm very high in Dalvin Cook this season, and the running back position is thinner, like I've said multiple times before, than the wide receiver position. So Jefferson's my wide receiver one. Cook, I have him as running back four right now. I'm much higher, I think, than a lot of other people on Dalvin Cook. And here's some reasons why. So you might say to me about Dalvin Cook, well, he's never played over 14 games in his career. You know, and he seems to be banged up all the time. I'd like to talk about the upside. So he's had multiple games with 20-plus fantasy points in 2021. He averaged 16.4 on the year, but in the games he played above 50% of the snaps only, he averaged just over 17. Weeks 1 through 16, he was the RB2 in 2020. So he almost was the RB1 in 2020, despite not having a full season. He finishes the RB3 in 2019. So he's been a top three running back in 2019 and 2020 without playing over 14 games. So to me, that says if this guy played a full season, would he have been the number one running back in those seasons? And he's literally right there. You know, committees are becoming more and more common in the league, but he's been top five in snap share the last two seasons, as well as top five in carries and rushing yards. You know, three straight above 1,100 rushing yards, and also three seasons of 40-plus catches, showing he can be a dual-threat guy. And now they got a new coaching staff. Kevin O'Connell from the Rams is the new head coach. And I'm really big on Cook having a big year because he catches passes. He doesn't share the backfield. He's shown us that he can almost be the running back one. And if he's healthy, man, I think he can be a candidate to finish as that overall running back one in 2022. And no knock on the question. He's not going to fall to the third. I don't think either one of those guys in Scott Fishbowl, at least my draft, he didn't. But that's it for the mailbag episode today. I ranted a little bit longer than I wanted to. like I said before, if you are still tuned in, go check out that draft guide. It's pinned on my Twitter page. It's 86 pages of just data from last year, the NFL draft by positions in there, and then I go into my personal top 12. I got player spotlights. I got guys that I'm out on at cost, late round dart throws, my sleepers, my breakouts. I put a lot of effort into this. Took way too many hours that I don't want to count. And it's only $5, man. It's on my my Twitter page. $5. There's directions on how to go and grab that. Any edits that I make, I always email those out to everybody. But thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll see what else is cracking for the rest of the week. But you can probably count on me doing something every day. So appreciate you guys tuning in, and have a good night.